You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
For our words of wisdom this morning, we're going to hear a passage from Romans 12. It's a brief passage, but before we hear it read, just a reminder, Paul was one of those people that without whom we wouldn't be here today. Paul is one of those people who also is really misunderstood in the contemporary church because so many of the letters that are in our canon that are printed in your Bible that say they're the letter of Paul are not Paul. And we've talked about this before where Romans and 1 Thessalonians and 1 and 2 Corinthians and Galatians and Philemon, those are all original letters of Paul. We know that because of vocabulary and context and all of that. But some of those that are really problematic, Ephesians, Colossians, Timothy's, those are not Paul. In fact, they were written by people that were trying to undo Paul because Paul was too radical. Just a case in point, we've talked about it before. Timothy talks about, women need to sit down and shut up in church. Right? And how many churches still function with that as one of their mantras? They don't allow women in leadership on their boards or in anything, maybe to help in the nursery or something, but certainly not as clergy. Where if you go to the original Paul and a book like Romans, and if you go to the end, you see clearly where he says, hey, I'm sending this letter with my colleague, Phoebe, who is not only going to read it for you, she's going to interpret it for you. And he calls her an apostle. Wow! And there are plenty of other places where the original Paul clearly was able to empower women to be leaders in the church. And that's just one of the kind of gear-grinding kind of realities that we have in so many of our texts, and why it's important for us to remember that what we're reading has got a lot of background to it, and we need to be very careful before we just take it at face value. One of the things that we're looking at today in Romans is just a reminder that Paul didn't know the Romans. That's why he sent Phoebe ahead to kind of say, hey, this is what I'm on about. This is who I am. These are my values. And I thought I'd send this person to carry my message first and to take the grief, right, before I get there. And so he is really kind of laying out what is most important for him. This is an extremely short passage, but I think it has bearing on what Jane and I are going to talk about today. So let's listen to this first passage from Romans 12, and I'll invite Jane to come up and have a seat with me as Linda reads our passage to us.
I appeal to you, therefore, brothers and sisters, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your minds, so that you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
Let's pray. Loving and gracious Spirit, we're grateful for these words of wisdom that come to us from the earliest expressions of what it meant to be a follower of Jesus. May these words and the words that Jane and I share this day be part of all of our renewing our lives and opening our minds to the possibilities that none of us would leave this place unchanged. We gather as followers of Jesus. Amen. Hi, Jane. Are you nervous?
No.
All right, good.
Should I be? So,
yeah, I don't know, maybe. We have not rehearsed this at all. I said, I titled this, and help me out, it's in the program. It's Changing One's Mind, Stick-to-itiveness, and the things that really matter. And I told Jane, look at your face. That's because I said, these are things that I associate with Jane. I'm just going to, by way of introduction, I think this is right. We've known one another now for 30 years, probably.
I think that's right.
Yeah.
I think that's right.
And in fact, amazing singer, yes?
Wow.
And thank you to the band for jumping in on that.
Yeah, they're wonderful.
Wow. So 24 years ago this weekend, Jane sang at Laura and my wedding.
Yes.
So,
I think I can hear now.
Yeah, so that was an important part of our lives. But I first met Jane when I was the pastor at Epworth United Methodist Church, and the nearest Roman Catholic Church was St. Vincent's.
That's right.
And so they had a killer band at St. Vincent, and we had part of a killer band at Epworth. And so we wanted to start a contemporary service, and I would go over for youth mass
on
Sunday
nights. You used to blow your saxophone
in my ear. Right in your ear.
He would stand right behind me.
Yeah.
And I was like, who is this? And he was, of course, tall and real young. And I wasn't, so it was like, who are you?
So what we did is we loved playing together so much. And so we worked out a deal that Scott on guitar and me on sax, we would come over and play youth mass on Sunday night. And then you guys would come over on Sunday mornings and play at Epworth. So the two bands kind of did both locations. And since we were both Methodist and Roman Catholic, we named ourselves the Rhythm Methodists.
I don't remember that part.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So.
Wow, that's pretty racy, David.
Yeah. So, one of the things that I wanted you to share a little bit about is your journey. And I remember years ago, you were a Roman Catholic laywoman, and we had long conversations
about... Yes, we did. And then I jumped ship, and I came and actually joined your church.
Yeah, and we talked about you having a call to the ministry. You want to talk a little bit about that?
We did. I remember we used to, in fact, Living the Questions stuff kind of evolved from some of those discussions because I had no education. I only had a high school education, but a serious feel for wanting to do more with church and with my faith. And I would talk to David about that, and I had a million things that I didn't understand or agree with. And so we had good conversations about what's important and what you want to do with your life. And he encouraged me. He even looked into seeing if there was a way that I could go through schooling, you know, because I was a member then at that time. And my, you know, David, well, he did my third and best marriage ceremony. So I was married at the time to somebody else who was like, I don't want a pastor as a wife, no. And so I didn't go any farther than that, but I did feel encouraged to go back to school and do education. I could be a teacher, and that was my ministry. So for 15 years, I was a teacher in school in Avondale, loving the kids and loving being a teacher. And so that worked. That was an acceptable thing to second husband, which, you know, that didn't last much longer than that anyway. So it was, you know.
But then you went on and got a master's degree.
I went to get my master's degree, and that was pretty much the end of the marriage. That was the end of the marriage.
So how did your faith take you along? I mean, you used to work, you used to build cruise missiles.
I did. You know, it's funny how you do have a journey and a path. And I think one of the things that's led me all the way is, I call it the voice, though it's not like a voice saying, Jane, do this. But it's some part of my thinking process that follows me and nudges me and pokes me. And I've learned to trust and listen to that. And so I started as a Lutheran, and I was Lutheran most of my life, and I moved to Arizona and, you know, got married and then went into Catholic because my second husband was Catholic, and I thought if I go there, he'll come with me. It didn't happen. And then it just, I let myself try to find what felt right to me about how I was able to worship and be in any kind of a community that's a community of God. And so it never was gone from me. It just took different forms. And I might be adaptable, I was telling David last night when we were talking a little bit, I said, my husband calls me the change junkie because I like to do a lot of different things and I can't stay with anything. I don't understand someone, God bless you, if you worked at some place for 45 years. I don't understand how that can happen. Because for me, that's not a possibility. And so the voice says, this is a good place for you to go to do this. Try it. And I listen and I go. And it's kind of been an interesting winding path because I did spend some time in the Methodist Church. We had a couple of great summers at camp doing clown ministry, which was really fun, and kids loved it. And
I'm afraid of clowns. So.
And then, of course, you know, we're just starting to get this really good working church relationship going, and then he comes over to this side of the world, and I had to stay over on the west side of Phoenix, and that's, like, really asking a lot out of me to drive across town to go to church.
Well,
so
once you spent some time teaching, and then what was the voice? How did you move to be a UCC pastor?
I ended up in Prescott, and Prescott is a really wonderful place in many ways, but it is pretty conservative on a lot of levels, and some of it is political and some of it is with faith. And when I was there, because I had such, David was already formulating what became, you know, what his ministry is now then. He was asking big questions. He was a young, new pastor just trying to figure out where his faith had led him and what it was going to be like. And I was inspired by that and always have been. And so, and I always still felt a call of some kind. And when I was up in Prescott, I looked in lots of places and couldn't find a place that felt comfortable to me. Believe it or not, even within your own denomination and in the Lutheran denomination and any of the ones that I might have tried to go fit in, I wasn't finding the message I wanted to hear. And in fact, some of them I actually left in the middle of a sermon because the stuff I was hearing was so offensive to me.
I've had that happen.
And so, as a desperate woman, I had made a phone call and was actually setting up an appointment to have the Quakers come up and teach me how to be a Quaker. Because I really wanted to be, I wanted it to be more sincere and more real to what I think Jesus and God, or what you call God, is. And so I ended up in a UCC church, First Congregational Church, United Church of Christ. I'd never heard of the UCC. I didn't know what it was. My whole life I'd never heard of it. And when I looked it up online, the first thing that I saw was a little video clip of a guy that was a homeless guy that was telling the story of being brought in off the street and welcomed in a church. And I thought, okay, there's the church I want to go. And when I went, it was just amazing to me that this denomination is like, that's what they're all about. And I don't want to have anybody like jump ship or anything from here, but it really had a very accepting, tolerant, welcoming message across the board.
We're closet UCC.
Yeah, I know you are. Yeah. Sure. And actually, the Methodist Church in Prescott is really working its way toward being an open and affirming, welcoming church for gays and lesbians, which that's big deal in Prescott, because there are a lot of gays and lesbians in Prescott. You'd be amazed how many.
So you went on to seminary. We just touched last night a little bit on how your feelings about taking classes from people like Dom Crossan.
Yep.
But just taking overview classes.
I took some classes because this church that I joined, the very short version is something happened to the pastor. He was not there anymore. They had an interim. That was not acceptable. I was a member of the church. I was the moderator and president. And all of a sudden, we found ourselves without a pastor. And I thought, the voice said, you can do this. You can do this. And so I made a pitch to the people in my church. I said, you can grow me. I can be your homegrown pastor. And in the UCC, and I guess even in the Methodist Church, you can be a licensed minister, which means you do everything that an ordained pastor does in the confines of the building that you are licensed to work. And so through that process, I became the pastor of my church.
And hear that, Hunter?
And it was, I had to go through a pretty extensive interview. I had to tell my whole story. I had to write a bunch of stuff. And I did have a master's degree that was helpful because it wasn't in theology at all. It was in education, you know. But the crossovers are very real. And if you love teaching and if you love being a teacher, you can be a good pastor. And I knew instinctively that I was already called. I had not been able to do it with all the time I was spent with David, but I had evolved and my life experiences and all parts of me were ready to do this. And so it happened. And I did take some seminary classes. But the bad thing about that is I learned stuff that was dangerous. And that's what he really loves this part. I know he loves that I'm saying this. Because all the different messages I'd gotten since I was this big in the Lutheran Church were not what I was getting when I really dug deeper into knowledge that any of us can get and know more about guys like Paul. Know more about how it really was in those days. And the truths that we don't all have seem to get access to or hear make it seem Christianity is a very special and amazing. It has lasted these thousands of years, but it's not the only way to love God. And what I learned was there are other ways, and they're just as relevant, and they're just as meaningful, and whatever God's name is all across the world is worthy, and people are seeking a relationship with whatever that God is. And so I found myself really struggling with some of the truths that I'd been told because I didn't think they were so truthful anymore. And it was bigger and wider and more amazing than I thought it was and to be packaged in the box of Christianity. And so as a pastor, you know, I loved it. I was a pastor almost 6 years and I learned many good things about myself and about the people that I was pastoring and working with and loving. And I also learned my limitations. And as I got to where I was thinking more deeply and openly about the different things that I had come to understand about the holy being that we call God, that others call Allah, others call, you know, I couldn't stick it in that confined space. And I was struggling with some of the truths that are in the Bible that we share. Because I couldn't be comfortable with resurrection. I could be extremely comfortable with Jesus and everything Jesus taught. But learning, and it was the synopsis book.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the seminary classes that just blew me away was it's this thick, and it's all the Gospels laid next to one another, page by page, chapter by chapter. And when you look at them and compare them, and you see that Mark is this very little sterile list of things that happened. And then Luke embellishes it one way because Luke's audience, you know, he was the doctor. And so he's more scientific. And Matthew is going after the shepherd types and the people, you know. And so their stories are stealing from Mark, but they're adding details.
And John is a blank column.
John is over on the side being like what they might call him the woo-woo guy, you know, because he was so esoteric in his approach. But he was, I love John. But you look at the differences, and yet they're all based off of Mark. Because Mark was written first. And the others were added later. Because they were great advertisers. They were trying to bring to Christianity to people. Well, Jesus was a Jew. And Jesus was born to bring the Jews back to the Jewish faith. Not to be Christians. And, you know, I don't know about you, but when I'm a little kid, I think everybody's supposed to be pushed into that same place. So that was mind-blowing to me. Because I thought, holy cow.
That's not what you said last night.
No, I can't say the other word.
Use another word.
He said I could say holy shit, and I can't. I can't bring myself to do that. Even though I say it, I am like the potty mouth pastor. You need to know. I am really bad. I used to work with a bunch of men building bombs. It's true. I did. And so you can't be all cutesy. You have to be you know, especially when they're grabbing at you, and you know, you have to be different.
That's another story. Yeah.
So it just seemed like as I got more understanding, the Bible is a useful, beautiful book of faith written by people of faith for people of faith. It is the beautiful story of the faith. Now, but how true and how real is all of that? That's up to everyone's interpretation. And unfortunately, inside of me, I couldn't just say that was it. And so it was very difficult after a lot of years being with really good people and working with them and trying to, we brought an open and affirming church to Prescott, Arizona. We became an open and affirming, welcoming church, which we had people just like write on our sign outside. They were really angry with us. But I found that I couldn't stand in front of my congregation and do Christmas celebration and Easter celebration, and I couldn't be dishonest with them, but I couldn't be some of the things that I felt that they needed and wanted. And I had to stop because it was bothering me enough to not feel that I can preach the resurrection story, I can preach an empty tomb. And there were people that noticed the difference. And so it was a thing of my own, you know, doing the right thing. It cracked me up that you said doing the right thing. It's like, well, I don't know if it was right, but it was what felt like was the most honest thing to say, this isn't what I am anymore. And I still love God, and I still have faith. It just is a lot bigger and broader than any one denomination can unfold. And that's probably the best description I have.
Can you see why I could spend hours talking with Jane?
I don't know.
Look, we could spend hours talking.
We did.
Is there anything we haven't covered? I mean, you can hang around a little bit afterwards and chat with people.
If they want to talk.
Yeah.
I guess if there is a bottom line thing, because when David said, I'd love you to do this, and I thought, what am I going to talk about? Everyone has the voice. And some people need to be in a place that feels secure because that's where they can be their strongest and best going out into the world. And so when you have this kind of a community that you come together, and I mean, that shawl ministry down there, those things are so important in the world. And I guess the other thing that we did mention yesterday is if I have concerns, the world is making me unhappy right now. I feel very deeply the pain that everybody's going through. I don't know why, but it really bothers me. And, you know, it just seems to be more and more confused, and I'm concerned about the things that are happening to our earth, and it can overwhelm you. And you can go, why? What am I supposed to do? And I think that song, the words to that song really hit a nerve with me. And we all can do something. And even if it's a tiny something, and that's kind of where I've landed, is I want it to be, whatever I can do, I want it to be meaningful, even to a small group of people, for a little piece of time, that it's the right thing. Because that's that much more that is being done, that's right. And I can't change all the stuff that's out there, but I can control some little pieces of my world. And I'm finding that's a peaceful place to land, to get involved in something like that, to know that you are making a small impact and it's still worthy. So rounding through then, when I left the church, I had to, because of the UCC mechanism, I was not supposed to go back to that congregation because the new pastor there deserves a chance to set the church the way they need it to be. And so I've stayed away for 4 years and not contacted the people except one or two because, you know, you're really not supposed to. There are a lot of not supposed to's and rules, and I wanted to honor that. I didn't want to be disruptive to the new pastor. And just this last couple of months, they called me from the Southwest Conference to help a church close. One of our sister churches in Dewey was really struggling, and they could not be awake anymore. They couldn't be there anymore. They had to close. And so they asked if I would go and be their substitute pastor because their pastor had to leave. She had a really serious illness. And so I ushered them through to the end of their time and actually cleaned up the church, literally. I threw out lots of wine glasses. It was pretty crazy. But that aside, the good about that, because I've been without a community for 4 years. I have not been in a church because it didn't feel right, because of me and because of just stuff. And I'm headed back to my church. The pastor has warmly invited me back. They have grown into a different direction, which is a good direction. And he said, we'd love to have you. The people who know you would love to see you again. And there are a lot of new people that don't know you, and it would be good for all of us. And I really appreciated that kind of a welcome. So I'm going back to the community. And with my crazy head, and he said, that's okay, I like that. So, you know, be who you are with God. And I guess that's what I would like to close with. How's that?
Thanks, Jane.
Okay, thanks for having me. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information on our faith community or to support this outreach with a donation, be sure to visit us online at www.reachtouchteach.com.